Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on our website, on our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley kicks off our Christmas series, Christmas at the Movies. Now, here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. Hey, was that good or what? I mean, those, I'm talking about the music and everything, the bumper too, but the dancers, the liturgical dancers, we're here, y'all wave again right there. Were they good or what? Oh my goodness. Hey, you think you have it tough, you should try to follow that. I mean, I've got to get up here and come behind that. We love Christmas, and such a wonderful time to reflect and look back and see what God has done, and it's turned in, of course, to so many other things in our culture, which is fitting that there are a lot of things that should come out of it, including a lot of movies. And this week, I'm going to, if you looked in your outline, the title is The Island of Misfit Toys. Anybody remember what movie that came from, Christmas movie? Right, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So here's what I want you to do this morning. As we get started, see if we can pull some house lights up for just a minute. And I want you to turn next to the person or turn to the person next to you and tell them your strangest Christmas toy or Christmas gift that you've ever been given in all the years. I want you to think for a minute, what was the strangest, most unusual Christmas toy or gift that you ever got? And then you can add if you ever talk to that person again. Go ahead. Talk to the person next to you. Okay, did anybody get any really, really zingers out there? Like, wow. I mean, I never got a, I always loved Christmas toys and Christmas gifts. So I never got anything too wild or outrageous, except my aunt would always give me a practical gift. And so she always gave us, most of the time, either socks or gloves. And one year, she gave me two left-handed gloves. And I never understood what that meant. I was like, okay. You know, I didn't mind the gloves because you could wear them and use them to play with and everything else. This is one of the reasons I loved Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Because it was such a real parody of the things that we go through. In fact, most of us can identify with the movie Rudolph and with the Island of Misfit Toys because we realize we're misfits too. Rudolph was a misfit. In fact, in the movie, he actually says that, and he starts to leave home, to run away, and he aligns himself. He finds some friends. Remember the elf that decided he didn't want to be an elf, didn't want to make toys? Instead, he wanted to be a what? Yes, y'all remember? Sure you do. And did he feel out of place? Did he feel like he fit in? No, he felt like he didn't fit in at all. In fact, one of the spots in the movie, I was watching it last night, if anybody got a chance to see Rudolph last night. And last night, I was reminded how at one point he's in the toy-making room by himself, and he's attaching teeth to all the dolls. And of course, yeah, the head toy-making elf comes in and like, what are you doing? Well, I thought I'd give the dolls teeth. No one wants a doll with teeth. You know, what are you thinking? And that's when he climbs out the window and he says, I will never what? Fit in. I will never fit in. I'll never be a part of this. It just won't work. I feel ridiculed. I feel picked on. So I will never find my place. I'm going to leave, and I'm going to find some other people to be around and see if I can fit in there. See, Rudolph, even the song, think about the song for a minute. Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer. So apparently a red nose for a reindeer is a little different. Had a very shiny nose. It didn't actually say it was glowing like a light bulb. We add that part. But it did say it was shiny, so it was unusual. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it. Yeah. all of the other reindeer used to call him names. They wouldn't let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. So we can identify, right? I grew up just telling someone, because there are several other redheads here. It's all gone now. But I grew up redheaded and freckle face. And man, in my day, I got called a lot of names. Some of them were intentionally hurtful. Some of them were just, you know, kids will pick on other kids. It's just who we are out of our own insecurity. Sometimes it just seems like fun. I didn't get much from adults ever, but from other kids. And it was hurtful at times. It was painful at times because it made you feel like I'm just not like everybody else, you know? Am I ever going to fit in? Will I ever find my place? And I think it takes us to two things that are really kind of a conflict in our lives. Think about this for a minute with yourself. At one point, we don't really like the fact that we don't, I don't think you're supposed to have a double negative in there, but we don't like the fact that we don't fit in. And at the same time, we don't like the fact that we don't stand out. We really want to be both, don't we? We want to be unique. We want to be different. We want to not just be, a part of the crowd and just, you know, one of the numbers and just sort of out there. And at the same time, we want to fit in. We want to be a part. We want to be welcomed. We want to be, you know, in the middle of everybody. So cultures and constantly go back and forth with this movement and this weaving to try to figure out how do you teach your kids that you are unique and you're different, and that's a good thing. And how do you teach your kids that you need to fit in and not stand out and not be unique and different from the standpoint of fitting in? It's a struggle for us. In fact, you may go to a school that decides, you know, we don't like our kids standing out too much, wearing too much that's different. So we are going to what? Uniforms, right? Everybody will wear the same thing. That way, everybody's the same. Everybody's treated the same. Everybody's valued the same because we all wear the same thing. And then, of course, if you do that, and my kids did that at a certain age also, you know, the last thing in the world when they get home they want to wear is the what? Yeah, the uniform. No, I want to be my own person. I want to be just who I am. And at the same time, you can get picked on for being your own person and just who you are. So Rudolph and Hermie, they run off with Yukon Cornelius and all these other misfits, and they end up on the island of misfit toys. And I always love this because, you know, every toy just kind of by nature wants to be loved by a child. And if you're a toy that is not loved by a child, as they do in the movie, you know, that would be the worst thing at all. And here's the song from the movie about misfit toys.
Would you like to be a spotted elephant?
Or a choo-choo with square wheels on your caboose?
Or a water pistol that shoots jelly?
We're all misfits!
How would you like to be a bird that doesn't fly? I swim!
Or a cowboy who rides an ostrich?
Or a boat that can't stay afloat?
We're all misfits!
If we're on the island of unwanted toys, we'll miss all the fun with the girls and the boys. When Christmas Day is here, the most wonderful, 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 wonderful day of the year.
It's a good song, isn't it? You ever feel like a misfit toy? You know, when I was watching that, I started thinking about, hey, growing up, I would love to have had a squirt gun that shot jelly. I mean, that would have been great. I mean, I thought, where do you get those at? Or, you know, when the birds say, how would you like to be a bird that doesn't fly but swims? And I thought, penguin? I mean, you know, right there are birds that's what they do. They are different. They do kind of stand out, but at the same time, they find their place. So here's what I want to do this morning. I want to take a look at a couple of stories, but just kind of going back to last week, we were looking at the Grinch, and we were talking about how God, through Christmas, He deals with some things in our lives, and talk about just kind of setting it up. What does Christmas mean? And I've got 10 statements this morning. We'll see if you like them or if you would add to them. But here's just the first five that came from last week. First of all, Christmas means that God has not forgotten about us. He hasn't forgotten about us. God knows we struggle. God knows that we are different and that life is not always easy for us. If there was anyone who was a fitter inner, it was Elizabeth last week and Zechariah. They tried to keep the law. They tried to fit in and do their duty and tried to live godly lives, and they were people who fit in. But at the same time, they were a couple who felt like misfits because they could not have a child. So they understood exactly, even doing all the right things, sometimes you still feel like you don't fit in. Second thing is, Jesus takes away our guilt. That's the point of Christmas, is that God understands. And there's some things that we just don't fit in with because of the things that we have done. He comes to take away our guilt, to bring us back to a place where we know this is where I fit, this is where I belong. He also came, though, to take away our shame. And last week, this is actually, we spent a lot of time talking about this. Probably more difficult is the shame that we carry, sometimes because of what we've done. Sometimes we carry shame, as in Elizabeth and Zechariah's life has nothing to do with anything we've done. It's just there. Why is it there? Because we don't feel like God cares, because we don't feel apart with God. And so when God comes and he sends his son and says, no, you matter to me. I care about you. It does something incredible to us. It lifts our shame from us. And in Elizabeth's life, she all of a sudden in her old age could have a child. It's a picture of God saying, I am the one who will lift your shame from you because I will welcome you back home. I will bring you back to myself. I have a friend, he's also a preacher, and so I have some, and preachers do this, which is good, and he will watch my messages, and he will give me comments on it. He will critique and add things to it and all that, and so just to let you know, he said, you know, what I really liked about the message was the fact that you talk about Zechariah and how Zechariah, because like the Grinch, his heart shrunk because of his shame with, you know, never being having a child, it shrunk to the point that he could not believe God or trust God when God came and saying, you're going to have a child. And as I read his comments and all, here's my first thought. I don't remember saying that. Don't you like that? Like, where did he get that from? You know, I didn't say that. That was not one of my points. I didn't, you know, and I told him, I said, it was really good. I wish I had said it. I thought, man, that was just a great application that he caught and that he figured out that I didn't even have in there. See, you will see things when God reaches out to you and you recognize that God has sent his son into the world to take away not only your guilt, but to take away your shame, the fact that you're not sure you fit in. You're not sure that God wants you. You're not sure that there's a place for you. When God lifts that from your heart, you will see things because your heart will expand and your heart will get bigger and your compassion will get bigger, just like Zacharias and Elizabeth did, all because of what God has done and how he has changed and how he has filled your heart. Two more things from last week that kind of go into this. We were made to fit in. It was his plan that we would fit in, and that's why he sends his son, Jesus. And we were also made to be what? Unique, different. We're not the same. We weren't made to be the same. God creates an endless variety of people, different skills, different likes, different dislikes, and that's okay. The goal is not for everyone to look alike, act alike, be alike, do everything alike. It's that our focus of our lives that brings us together would be Christ himself, Jesus himself, the gift that God would give that would focus us on him and bring us all different gifts, angles together because of who he is. And Isaiah's prophecy in Isaiah chapter number 9. We read a little bit of this last week. Let me add one more verse from Isaiah chapter 9. This is written 600 or 700 years before Jesus is ever born, and Isaiah will talk about who he will be. This is what he says. He says, "For a child is born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders." And then listen to these names. You've probably heard these before because they're in a lot of Christmas songs. And his name will be called, say these with me, he'll be called what? Wonderful Counselor, Mighty, Everlasting, the Prince of... aren't those wonderful titles? They describe who Jesus will be. In fact, I can't go through all of them this morning, but they are all tied to the fact that he is God, that he is a gift, that he has come to change our lives, the way we interact with everyone, the way the world is, and ultimately he will change everything in that final day when he resolves everything. But think about the first one. This is who he is. He is a wonderful counselor. You know what a wonderful counselor is? A wonderful counselor is someone who helps you understand yourself. They can help you kind of put it together, figure out where you do fit, that it's okay that there are these differences in your life, that you're not made like everyone else. That's part of God's design. And they help you reason through those things and figure those things out. They help guide you and lead you on a path that you need to go so that you can make sense of your life. I love to pick on the fact that, of course, you know, people speak of wanting to learn to love themselves, and I understand that, but it's one of my little kind of things I pick at. My problem and your problem is not that we don't love ourselves. In fact, we probably love ourselves too much. Our problem is we have a hard time accepting ourselves. We have a hard time accepting our differences, the things that we don't like about ourselves. We tend to look at other people and say, "I wish I was like them." In fact, maybe you grew up and had someone tell you, "Why can't you be like, you know?" And they're pointing you in a different direction, and you're like, "But I'm not like that. That's just not the way I see things. It's just not. It's sort of like Hermie, you know, the elf. He wants to be a dentist. I don't want to make toys, right?" And so it's a difficult struggle for us. We need someone who will help us make sense of our lives, make sense of the world around us, to find out where we fit in and why God made us different. Because not all of us need to do the same things. There's a place for every one of us to find our gifts, our time, our place, because God made us wonderful. King David talks about this. He looks at his life and he says, "Man, I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Wow. I mean, who can think up, imagine, understand, figure out, God, how wonderful you are, and as I look at my life, how wonderfully you have designed me. But you're not going to figure that out. You're not going to find that unless someone helps you. Unless someone guides you through the hurts, the pains, the insults, the feelings at time that you have been forgotten about and that you are lost in this world. And that is why God sent his son, Jesus Christ, to be our wonderful guide, our wonderful counselor who would lead us and would change our perspective on our own lives as well as those around us. Here's number six. Christmas means what is true about us now. I want you to catch this. What is true about us now does not have to be true about us forever. What is true about us now does not have to be true about us forever. You might look at yourself and you may not like your life. You may not understand your life. That may be the way it is now. It does not have to be that way forever because God sent his son Jesus Christ into the world. In fact, just let that sink in for a minute. What's true about you now doesn't have to be true about you forever. Say this with me. What is true about me now doesn't have to be true about me forever. Not after what Jesus did. Not after what God did in sending him into the world. He actually came to change how we see ourselves, understand ourselves, how we look at ourselves in the light of eternity. That's why he's called the Everlasting Father. There's that connection with him and time even past what you and I understand. Here's what it says in Matthew chapter number 2, part of the Christmas story. It says, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of, you know this guy, King Herod. And King Herod is one of those guys. It's not the Herod of 33 years later when Jesus is put on trial. This is Herod that is Herod the Great. And he is king of the region. And he is smart. He is an incredible engineer. He is a builder. He wanted to build a legacy to himself. But King Herod is ruthless. And King Herod is one of those guys who looks at it as, I will not let anyone get in the way of me getting what I want. He's ruthless. In fact, it was dangerous even to be a relative of King Herod, because he might view you as a threat to his power and his position. And Herod had several of his relatives put to death only because he suspected, he feared, he was afraid they might be seeking his position. It goes on to say, about that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem. So I look at these, you know, these magi, these wise men, I look at them as misfits. I don't know about you. But if you've got to go to a foreign land seeking something, and you walk into a place where you don't feel like you're known, or this is a familiar place, it can be an awkward thing. But they're there for a reason. They're there seeking something that they have decided it's worth it. It's worth to take the risk. It's worth it to go to a foreign place because of what they were after. And here's what they came to Jerusalem asking. Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. Now, you may think, what a wonderful thing. And for the people in the area, you know, that this man has come in, they're honoring the area, honoring the people. We have seen something. They were astrologers, and we've seen something in the stars that has led us to seek after a child who will be born king of the Jews. But look at the next verse, verse 3. King Herod was, say this with me, he was what? He was deeply distressed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. So let me explain this. There are two reasons that I know of that King Herod would have been deeply distressed with astrologers, magi, wise men from the east, maybe from the old Persian empire coming down. These were often considered king makers. Because in their lands, you could not take on the role or the place of being a king without them authenticating you. So they have come down seeking a child born to be king of the Jews. Let me tell you two reasons this is a problem. And the reason you see that it says Herod is distressed and everyone else now is distressed in Jerusalem. The reason is because as they walk in and they say, we have come seeking the child born to be king of the Jews, Herod has had no child born recently. So everyone is going like, hey, we've come to see you. Yeah, oh, you know, bad idea, right? Oh, maybe you should have checked this out ahead of time, because Herod does not have a child who has recently been born, and Herod will be greatly threatened by the idea that there is a child somewhere who has been born to take over this position. Second reason is this. Herod is not in line to be king. Herod was not, in their day, your heritage was key to you assuming a position like this. In fact, you know, even Jesus is called the son of, in the line of who? King David, because there was a lineage that was there. There was inheritance as far as those positions were concerned. Not like us, but that's the way they did it. And King Herod, even though he had this position and he'd kind of worked it out with the Romans and taken this spot, Herod knew legally, according to what their laws, he wasn't supposed to be king. He wasn't in line at all to be king. And all this does is point out, again, what everyone knows, what those who follow it are assured of, but it points out again and makes Herod even more insecure. And everyone in Jerusalem knew if Herod is insecure, if Herod feels threatened, it's a bad thing for the rest of us, right? You just feel like, oh man, if we could just get out of here. You ever have those moments? You think, oh, this is, what have I done? What have we done? And that's what they're thinking about the Magi. What were you thinking? This is going to be bad for all of us. You ever had those moments? I was telling someone of a time when, speaking of babies born, when I was a young minister, had a good friend. They had a child, and it was about a month or two later. I'm at church down in Houston, and a lot of people around. You spend a lot of time as a minister just reaching, shaking hands. We had actually thousands of single adults that we worked with, and this couple had been a part of that group. And like I said, I'd been to the hospital for the birth of their child and everything. And as I turn and see them, I looked at this girl that I knew her very well, and her husband, Joni, and I knew them very well. I said, "It won't be long now." Yes. And I'm like, what have I just said, right? And I mean, I literally broke out in a prayer, "Lord Jesus, come now. Please, you know, appear in this," because what was I, because as soon as I said it, I realized, what was I thinking? What was I saying? I was there at the hospital when the child was born. And of course, the good thing is they're good friends. They understand my, you know, stupidity sometimes, and my, you know, talking faster than my brain is actually working. And they laugh about, they still laugh about it, you know, to remind me. And you just feel like, oh my goodness, this is not a good moment. This is not a good time. That's the way all Jerusalem was. Not a good moment. Not a good time. You've reminded Herod he's not the king. You've reminded Herod that there are some promises and that God raises up kings in his plans according to the design that he has, that God has intentionally put into place. And that's not Herod's goal. Herod's goal is it would all be about him no matter what. Didn't matter what God's plans were, didn't matter what the law was, didn't matter what everyone else wanted. Herod was going to enforce his desires and his will no matter what, and anyone who got in the way was in a very dangerous position. It kind of brings up for me two other things about Christmas. Christmas means it takes more than talent and skills. Because like I said, Herod was a talented man. He was a skillful man. He knew how to work the powers. He knew how to build and to construct. Herod built the temple that was there in Jerusalem. It's called Herod's Temple, and it is enormous. It was so much bigger, magnificent than Solomon's temple. Herod built it intentionally to be bigger and more magnificent than Solomon's temple so that he could win the affection and the loyalty of the Jewish people. Herod built other things. He built a seaport that was often viewed as impossible to build, and used cement that could be set in the ocean water in order to build breakwaters and to build this seaport. It was one of the phenomenal engineering designs and constructions of his day, and still may be, because no one has ever attempted it on that part of the ocean again. Herod built Masada. You've heard of Masada before. He built Herodias, the place where eventually they would find his own tomb. He was an incredible builder, incredibly talented, skillful man, skillful at politics, skillful at power seeking in his life. But Herod's life reminds us it's not enough. It's not enough. You won't really find what you're looking for because there's a God that is above those things. And there's a God who sets his will and his mind into place. And for us, if we rely only on our skills and our talents and our own power, we tend to challenge God rather than submit to God and to find our place in God. I was watching, Joni and I were watching a Hallmark movie, and I understand it, completely understand it, the other night. And in the movie, there was a young man who had gotten turned down for a scholarship, and his mentor was in his face talking to him, and this is what he did. And I understand this, but this is what he does to him. He says, "Listen, you have got to be determined. Nothing will ever deter you, ever stop you. You will never stop until you get what you want." And I thought, you know, there's a good part of that. I mean, about having drive and moving forward. But there's also a fallacy to that, isn't there? That there is a limit to where you say, "Listen, I will go after my goals. I would love to try to be this or that." But there are some limits. Why? Because there's a God in heaven. And God sets his own plans into motion. No one overcomes those plans. You will only find yourself fighting against God if you determine and you decide, I will get what I want above everything else in life. Here's the next one, number seven, or number eight. It takes not only more than talents and skills, it also takes more, I'm going to take a shot at my profession, it takes more than knowledge, and it takes more even than doctrine. Knowledge and doctrine. Now, I'm not saying any of those things are wrong, just like I'm not saying that you shouldn't have some drive in your life and try to use your skills and try to, hone and build your talents. Those are all wonderful things. We were made to do that. But even knowledge and doctrine is not enough to find what Christmas is all about, to find what God is all about. In fact, if we're not careful, even those things can stop us, cause us to miss what God has for our lives, how we both fit in, and how God has made us very unique in life. And just to add to that, look at what Herod does. Smart man. The next thing he does in verse 4, he called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law, and he asked, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? Because Herod's a smart guy. He knows, if I don't know, I'll go find the people who do know so that I can find this child. Here's verse 5. In Bethlehem in Judea, they said, for this is what the prophet wrote. And they actually quote the prophet. They know exactly where to go. You, O Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. See, here's the point. You can know exactly where he will be born. Doctrinally, the priests and the scribes were the most correct people in the world. They knew what the Old Testament said, what God had taught, what the laws were. They knew doctrinally the right things. But of course, their story is the story of people who knew where to go. They knew where the child would be born, and you know the rest, right? And they did not what? They did not go. So just knowing doesn't fix anything. In fact, knowing and not going actually is a conviction. It's actually a judgment against us. If we knew where to find the baby born to be king of the Jews, if we knew where the Messiah was to be born, if we knew where our Redeemer and our Rescuer was and didn't go, that was worse than those who just didn't know. They didn't know to go there. These guys knew. They saw everything that had gone on. Now, maybe they struggle with the fact that if we went, King Herod might be upset with us, and he was a dangerous man. I understand that. But there are greater, bigger, more powerful things than King Herod. They should know that. They knew doctrine. They had the knowledge of who God was. They knew all the stories. And yet they were men who did not follow through on what they knew. Isn't that the struggle for life? We know we don't go. We know we don't go. And the problem is, if we don't go, we don't experience what God wants for us. We miss out on the part that shows us where we fit in. We miss out on the part that shows us why we were unique and why we were different. If we know and don't go, the knowledge doesn't fix anything. It doesn't make any difference because we lack the experience, the place to go there and to know him and to worship him. I had a good friend I was with, and we stopped at a barbecue place. You always meet really good people at barbecue places, right? And stopped at a barbecue place. There was a guy there named, you wouldn't know him, but a guy named Elmer Towns. He was a doctor. And I knew who Elmer Towns was. I didn't know he was going to be there. And he was one of the foremost authorities on the growth of the church in the United States and worldwide in a past generation. And he didn't know me or remember me, but I knew exactly who he was. So as I sat in this barbecue restaurant on these benches, I am peppering him with questions. I mean, I am all over him because he knows. I started asking him about, tell me about, you know, the Eastern Bloc countries. Tell me about, you know, what's going on in Russia. Tell me about China. And he knows. I mean, he has answers. And when he didn't know, he would say, you know, I'm not as familiar with that or what's going on. But he would tell me all sorts of things. And then he would reference the new authorities, the men and women who knew even better than he did now about what was really going on. And then he gave me this statement from one of those authorities who he said is the foremost authority of the growth of Christianity and the church worldwide. He gave me this statement, and I've hung on to it for years now. He said, this man told me, and I want to pass it on to you. He said this as far as the experience worldwide. He says, doctrine divides. Experience unites. Doctrine divides. Experience unites. He wasn't saying, he would be quickly to qualify, that no one is saying doctrine's not important. But he says, this is what has happened in the countries where Christianity has gone, is a lot of those countries have become more and more educated, more and more knowledgeable, and they fight over doctrine. And he says, and it kills growth. And then you go to the countries where it's new and the gospel is being proclaimed for the first time, and they get a chance to meet who Jesus is for the very first time. And he says, experience, the common experience unites them, unites their hearts, even though they don't see everything the same way. But they come to the same Savior, the same rescuer, the same one who was born to bring us together, to cause us to fit in, to take our differences and be bigger and greater than our differences. He's bigger and greater than those things. And he unites us. He says, but when men, you know, start working on their own knowledge and their own belief and their own doctrine to a point where they fight and they disagree, he says, it kills the common experience. I've held on that for a long time because I think he's exactly right. I'm a person of doctrine. That's what I do. That's what I study. That's what I work on. But it challenged me to remember, listen, it's only going and experiencing and seeing the child and being there and worshiping him. That's the only thing that brings us together. It's the only thing that heals us. It's the only thing that changes our understanding of ourselves and our understanding of the world around us. Here's what number nine, truth is, it always takes a relationship. It's the only thing that changes us. And this is what it goes on to say in verse 7. Matthew writes, then Herod called for a private meeting of the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, go to Bethlehem. He didn't go, but he said, you go to Bethlehem. Search carefully for the child, and when you find him, come back and tell me that I can go and worship him also. Of course, Herod had no intention of going and worshiping him. He just wanted to eliminate him, so he's deceiving them. And it says this, after this interview, catch this, after this interview, who went? Who went? The wise men went. Herod didn't go. He's supposed to be king of the Jews. The scribes and the Pharisees don't go. The wise men, foreigners from another land, they go their way. That meant they went down to where the child was. And the star that he'd seen in the east, catch this, the star guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them, stopped over the place where the child was. Because that was the whole point, was to find, to locate the treasure, the child born to be king of the Jews. Verse 10, when they saw the star, they were filled with joy. Because apparently they had lost the star, and now they saw it again. When they saw the star, their hearts were filled with joy. They entered the house. They saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chest and gave him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route. For God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod. Here's the last one, number 10. Their unique story, and they did have a unique story. Their unique story was tied to Jesus' story. That's what they discovered. So is yours. So is mine. Our story, the story of our lives, is absolutely tied to the birth of the Savior 2,000 years ago in the world. It was a historical event. It happened. It will never happen again. The Savior will never be born again. He was born 2,000 years ago. I know that sounds very exclusive, but it's because this was God's plan, that He would come into the world to change the world. Now, if you're like me, the day that you recognized it and the day you put your hope and your trust in Jesus, you felt like Jesus was born for the very first time in you. Yes. But that's because you recognized an event 2,000 years ago that you can't go back 2,000 years ago and see Him, but He is still alive and He can still come and be born in your heart to live inside of you. In Luke chapter 2, after the birth, this is Mary and Joseph going to the temple, and they are going to, in order to have Jesus properly presented before God. And it says this in verse 27. So when Mary and Joseph came to present the baby Jesus to the Lord, as the law required, Simeon was there. Simeon was an old man. Simeon had been told he would not pass away until he saw this child being born. He says, Simeon was there. He took the child in his arms. This is one of those great pictures, isn't it? He took the child in his arms. He praised God. And here's what he says. Sovereign Lord, now let your servant die in peace. He's talking about himself. As you have promised, I have seen your salvation, which you have prepared for all people. He is the light to reveal God to the nations. That means outside of Jerusalem. He is a light to reveal God to the nations outside of Jerusalem. And he is the glory of your people, Israel. Yes. Because everything they were as a nation, everything they had been, everything that they'd gone through was all pointing to the birth of this child. This is the glory of their existence, the glory of their effort, everything about them. This is what they were waiting for. Jesus' parents were absolutely amazed at what was being told them about Him. Felt like a misfit sometime? Not sure if you fit in? Looking around the world and, you know, trying to deal with all that goes on, and at the same time trying to be unique and different, stand out. Welcome to the human race, right? Where do we find our reconciliation? Where do we find our place? Where do we find the one who will lead us and will guide us so that we could live the lives that God had planned for us to live? Christmas says in the child born 2,000 years ago to come and save the world. Would you pray with me this morning? Dear God, we thank You that You knew our need. You understood what we would struggle with. You know how we see life and how we see ourselves. And You know how difficult it is for us. And rather than just leaving us to ourselves to just find our own way or to try to figure it out ourselves and most of the time make even a bigger mess of our lives, Lord, You planned all along to send Your Son Jesus into the world so that He could lead us and He could guide us. He could show us what we were looking for. He could change the way we see everything about ourselves, everything that we think or see about people in this world around us. The purpose of us coming together is always to know and to worship the Son of God, Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us, who changed everything about us. And that means a humble surrender of our hearts, a humble surrender of our plans, of our goals in life, saying, God, I have goals, I have things that I like to attain and achieve, but the truth is, your plans are so much bigger than mine. And they're so much better than mine. Because you made me. And you sent your son Jesus into this world to rescue me. So that my life would not be lived in vain. But instead, I could become the person, the man, the woman, young man, young girl, that you always planned for me to be. If you've never opened up your heart, if you've never put your hope and your trust in Jesus Christ, God's gift to all the world, this is why we come together. You can say something inside like, you know, Lord, I thank you that you sent your son Jesus. I thank you that he came and he took away my guilt. He gave his life for what I could not pay for in order to set me free. I thank you that he also came to lift the shame that sometimes I carry with my life, just not knowing why I just feel distant from you. But Jesus came so that I wouldn't feel distant from you, so that I would know you. I could follow you with my whole life. In Jesus' name I pray.